Reading for our meditation this evening is Zechariah 9, verse 9. It's just one verse, and it says this. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. Righteous and having salvation is he, humble and mounted on a donkey, on a colt, the foal of a donkey. We've all had the experience of waiting for someone who is late. Or even worse, we've had the experience of waiting for someone who never shows up at all. I won't ask for a show of hands, but I'm sure it's true. Perhaps the best known work by the Irish novelist and playwright Samuel Beckett is his play Waiting for Godot. Beckett won the 1969 Nobel Prize for Literature, and his works are known for their modernist, despairing philosophical outlook on life. In his play, Waiting for Godot, the two main characters, Vladimir and Estragon, they spend the entire time waiting for a man named Godot to show up, and he never does. It's unclear, if you read the play or see the play, it's unclear if either of them have ever actually met this Godot before. They only have vague instructions about where they're supposed to meet him, and we're never told why they're waiting around to meet him anyway. And over the course of the play, Vladimir and Estragon, they talk and they bicker about all sorts of things, including whether they should keep waiting for this Godot to arrive. And at one point, a messenger arrives and informs them that Godot will not be coming today, but surely tomorrow. So they decide to wait until the next day. But in the second act, a similar thing happens. They spend the time bickering and arguing with each other, and eventually, at the end of the play, a messenger comes and says the same thing. Godot won't come that day, but he'll surely come tomorrow. The second act of the play is sort of a strange repeat of the first act, and it ends without any resolution. Are Vladimir and Estragon going to keep waiting for him or not? We don't really know. Beckett was clearly making some sort of statement on what he viewed to be the meaninglessness of human existence. One critic described Waiting for Godot as a play which has achieved a theoretical impossibility, a play in which nothing happens, that yet keeps audiences glued to their seats. What's more, since the second act is a subtly different reprise of the first, he's written a play in which nothing happens twice. Maybe you had to read the play Waiting for Godot in college, or maybe you've seen it performed. It's one of those works of literature that it's important to know at least a little bit about. For example, if you're familiar with it, it will help you understand the graffiti that someone once spotted in a public restroom. Someone had written on the wall, "Back in 5 minutes," signed Godot. For Samuel Beckett, Waiting for Godot is a kind of picture of a bleak reality. It's a meaningless waiting around for nothing. Waiting around for someone who never shows up. Well, is that what reality is? Let me make the question a little more pointed even. Is that what Christianity is? Is it simply waiting around for someone who never shows up? The verse for our meditation this evening, Zechariah 9, verse 9, it promises the coming, the arrival of a king. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your king is coming to you. And yet, thousands of years after those words were spoken, here are Christians still waiting around for their king to come. That's what the season of Advent is all about, most fundamentally. It's about waiting expectantly for the coming of the Messiah, Jesus Christ. The Christian church has been doing that for 2,000 years almost. That's a long time. Even in New Testament times, the first century AD, Some people thought that this notion of waiting for the advent, the coming of Jesus Christ, they thought it was a ridiculous thing. In his second epistle, the Apostle Peter wrote that scoffers or skeptics would come along who would say, "Where is the promise of Christ's coming? For ever since the fathers fell asleep, all things are continuing as they were from the beginning of creation." 2 Peter 3, verse 4. In other words, back then people were saying, you know, you Christians, you talk about this Messiah who is supposedly going to come again, but where is he? Nothing's changed. Things are just rolling along as they always have been. How ridiculous and how absurd to be waiting around for this so-called king who isn't showing up as promised. Now, granted, Peter calls that out as scoffing sort of attitude, but there's a potentially legitimate question buried in there, particularly from our vantage point, roughly 2,000 years after Peter's day. Christians have been waiting, waiting, waiting for the arrival of someone who hasn't shown up yet. Isn't that what Samuel Beckett was writing about in Waiting for Godot? I don't know of anyone who enjoys being forced to wait for something. Don't believe me? Parents, you'll see the proof of this in approximately 12 hours from now. About 5 or 6 in the morning tomorrow. Maybe even earlier, depending upon the kind of children you have. Parents will be wishing that their children could just sleep in another half hour or an hour. Just wait a little bit longer before knocking on the door, or maybe not knocking, but just charging straight in, jumping on the bed with mom and dad. Kids have no patience at all for waiting on Christmas morning. Adults can be impatient as well, just about different things, and usually not at 5 o'clock in the morning. But the fact is, we're all impatient in one way or another. We all hate waiting. Christianity does ask a person to wait patiently for the coming of the King. Now, this is not some hidden secret. These are not, you know, the extra fees and charges that get added on after you've made your purchase, after you've made your order. The Scriptures have always made it clear that the church must wait a while, a good long while, before the King comes again. Jesus himself told several parables, stories, about a king who left his kingdom for an extended time. He told parables about people needing to be prepared for a long wait. At the end of his life, in chapters 14 through 16 of the Gospel of John, he repeatedly made it clear to his disciples that he was going away for a time. And when they questioned him about it, when they objected to it, he said to them, John chapter 16, verse 7, "It is to your advantage that I go away." In other words, he's telling them, the waiting can be a good thing. Now, how is that? Why are Christians still so willing to wait for the coming of the King, even though it's been roughly 2,000 years, and for all we know, it could still be another 2,000 years or more? Well, I'll mention just one thing this evening, and it's the reality that some gifts, some experiences, are all the sweeter for the waiting and the anticipation. Some things really are worth waiting for. Or we could put it another way, some people are worth waiting for. Regardless of how late they may be, they're worth waiting for. Christianity, it involves a lot of waiting, but it's not the same as waiting for Godot. Christians are waiting for someone that they know well, not for some stranger. And they're waiting for someone who has shown up before. when he was born in a stable in Bethlehem. Christians are not waiting for Godot. They are waiting for the returning King, Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Rejoice greatly, O daughter of Zion. Shout aloud, O daughter of Jerusalem. Behold, your King is coming to you. Friends, when we sing Christmas carols like, O come, Emmanuel, we're not singing to someone that we haven't met before. Emmanuel has come already. Emmanuel will surely come again. This Christmas Eve, let's celebrate Emmanuel's birth in Bethlehem, even as we look forward to his second advent, his second coming in glory.